All right. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And you heard from Dr. Buckley and Dr. Pak about severe combined immunodeficiency. You also heard from Dr. Pak about typical versus leaky form of SCID. I'm going to talk about another group of disorders, which are called combined without the severe immunodeficiencies, and try to highlight what are the clinical and immunological features that distinguish these disorders from typical SCID, in particular, to some extent also from leaky SCID, and what, more importantly, what are the differences in treatment with regard in particular to transplant that you need to consider when you deal with infants or babies or children who have combined immunodeficiencies. All right, so this is actually a summary of how we distinguish the definitions of severe combined immunodeficiency, typical forms, the leaky forms, and the combined immunodeficiency. We don't need to go through all of these, but again, to emphasize that SCID is based on a very low number of autologous T cells and or presence of maternal T cells, which is actually very common, up to 50% of the babies with SCID do have maternal T cells. These T cells, as Dr. Pak mentioned, don't have function. And these babies are at high risk of severe infection since early life. The leaky forms of SCID have a little bit more of T cells. They are reducing numbers, but they may be higher than this number here. There are no maternal T cells. The function of T cells is a little bit variable. In some cases, you do have some function, but also these babies are prone to severe infections since early life. What we call combined immunodeficiencies is when we have a partial impairment of T lymphocyte development and function. So you do have a variable number of T cells. You can produce a little bit more than in the typical or leaky forms of SCID, and the function of T cells may not be as abnormal as in typical or atypical SCID. Because of this, the clinical presentation with regard to infections may also be delayed, but as I will show in a minute, you also have a broader spectrum of clinical symptoms, not just infections. Okay, why do we have such a difference? What makes combined immunodeficiencies different from typical and atypical SCID? You've seen variations of this theme already. This is a T cell development in the thymus, and these are a number of genetic defects that result in typical or atypical forms of severe combined immunodeficiency by various mechanisms, all of which interfere with the ability to make these type of cells, which we call double positive T cells, which are the progenitors to the more mature CD4 and CD8 T cells. So all of the SCID defects, typical and or atypical, affect early stages in T cell development. And this is a typical hallmark of all of these group of disorders. By contrast, combined immunodeficiencies include a group of genetic disorders that affect later stages in T cell development. So you are in fact able to make most of these cells, but you're impaired in the production and or function of the most mature type of thymocytes and peripheral blood T cells. And this has important implications with regard to newborn screening. So what are the implications, in fact, of this treatment? Well, I already mentioned that the clinical presentation and the clinical course of combined immunodeficiency is different than SCID because it's not just infections. How do we diagnose them, and how do we treat them, and how different is this from what we do in babies with SCID? This is a complicated cartoon, but the point I want to make in this cartoon is that I highlight in red a variety of genetic defects that result in combined immunodeficiencies. And the point I want to make is that all of these defects, in one way or another, interfere with the function, with the signaling within the T cells. So whereas SCID result from failure of development of the T cells, the combined immunodeficiencies are caused by defects in function of the T cells. You can make the T cells, but those T cells don't work properly. Many of them actually are defects that are downstream of the T cell receptor itself. Others are functional defects through other receptors that are involved in signaling. So the function of the T cells is perturbed. As a result of this failure of signaling, the T cells that are generated have problems in terms of cell survival. So you tend to lose the T cells. The lifespan of the T cells is shorter than normal. There are problems, of course, in cell proliferation because the signaling is affected. They can't make as normal cytokine production as you would do in a normal T cells. The function of the T cells is impaired, so fighting a viral infection, recognizing an antigen, helping the B cells make antibodies is also affected. But also you are perturbing the function of regulatory T cells, which are meant to suppress autoimmunity. And so that is also affected by defects of TCR signaling as well as by other signaling defects in the T cells. So why do we see then immunodeficiency and autoimmunity going hand in hand in combined immunodeficiency? And I would say that this is perhaps the most important difference of combined immunodeficiencies versus SCID, where infections is the rule. And here you have infections and immune dysregulation or autoimmunity. Well, as I mentioned, most of the combined immunodeficiencies result in reduced signaling through the T cell receptor. The T cell receptor is capable, first of all, the T cell exists. It is capable of recognizing an antigen, but it doesn't respond to that antigen in a proper way. So when you have reduced signaling, you may have impaired production of T cells, but more often even impaired survival. You are reducing the function of those T cells, I mentioned, clearing viral infections, recognizing pathogens, and of course this results in infections. But you also have impaired function of the regulatory T cells, and the T cells, by the way, when they react to a pathogen, they also have to die at some point. You need to stop an immune reaction. If you don't do that, then you have ongoing immune activation, and so as a result of this impaired function of the regulatory T cells, or impaired cell death of the activated T cells, you have autoimmunity. So let's take overall a look at the clinical features of the combined immunodeficiencies. Well, these patients are prone to infections. There are some infections that you see more often in patients with combined immunodeficiencies, and these are especially chronic viral infections. Some infections in particular, many herpes viruses like EBV, HSV, VZV, CMV, but also HPV, which causes warts, molluscum. So when you see chronic viral infection of this kind, you have to wonder, is the T cell function normal? Could that infant have a combined immunodeficiency? EBV is also involved in many types of lymphoma. And in fact, if you follow these cohorts of patients with combined immunodeficiency, you will realize that many of them unfortunately develop EBV-related lymphoma. So there is a higher risk of malignancy, something you don't see very much in SCID because infants with SCID, they tend to succumb to infections early in life unless they're treated with transplantation. And very importantly, and I already mentioned this, patients with combined immunodeficiency tend to have immune dysregulation. What are the clinical features of these? Granuloma, vasculitis, skin nodules, cytopenias. So when you see, again, an association of these symptoms, that's a good indication that it might be, in fact, a combined immunodeficiency. What is the laboratory telling us? Well, T-cell count may be low, but the severity of the T-cell lymphopenia can be quite variable. Quite often, we do see an altered distribution of T-cell subsets, few naive cells, mostly activated memory cells. You have perturbed T-cell function. Immunoglobulin levels are variably affected. In some cases, you do have hypogammaglobulinemia because the T cells can't help the B cells make a normal number of immunoglobulins and antibodies. But sometimes, and this is associated with autoimmunity, you actually see hypergammaglobulinemia, another manifestation of immune dysregulation. And of course, in that case, you also often see autoantibodies. So is it possible to diagnose combined immunodeficiency at birth? Pretty much like Dr. Pak has shown us, it is possible, in fact, with severe combined immunodeficiencies. Well, this is the status. We already went through this. We know what incidence of SCID is. And Dr. Pak already showed this, where really what we're measuring to make a diagnosis of severe T-cell lymphopenia, including SCID at birth, is to measure this product here, which is called T-cell receptor excision circle. And this is actually produced at the time when you're making double positive T-cells, especially of the alpha-beta type. So because this is a rearrangement within the locus of the T-cell receptor alpha-delta. And so any issue happening early in thymopoiesis would also result in lower levels of TREX. But I said, and unfortunately, the combined immunodeficiency happened after this block in differentiation. And so they may not, in fact, come with low TREX levels. So is it true that, in fact, CID cannot be detected by the TREX assay? Well, I think the honest answer is that we have little data available. We do know the babies with SCID that have been identified through the newborn screening. We also know that with very few exceptions, there are really no cases of combined immunodeficiency that have been identified through the same program, but the numbers are still small and we need to do more. We also know from a study that actually Dr. Pak was the senior investigator, there are a number of other conditions which are distinct from typical and atypical SCID that may be diagnosed with the TREX assay, and she mentioned these, some of which actually you may consider at times being variants of the combined immunodeficiency, like ataxia telangiectasia, IMAGAN syndrome. These have some immunological features that are more similar to the combined immunodeficiencies. Also of interest, in that study, Dr. Pak reported 10 unspecified cases, all with low but detectable TREX, that we don't know what the molecular basis is. So the good answer would be that we would need to study at the genetic level also these cases to find out whether any of those, in fact, was mutated in a gene responsible for a combined as opposed to a severe combined immunodeficiency. We have recently reported on a new form of combined immunodeficiency, which is called DOC2 deficiency. These were five patients. In two of them, we were able to retrieve the newborn Guthrie card, the dried blood spot that was collected at birth. Both of these infants had low TREX levels, indicating that perhaps some forms of combined immunodeficiency might be identified through the TREX assay. In the literature, you will find variable data with regard to the ability of the TREX assay to detect infants with DOC2 deficiency, as well as with ZAP70 deficiency. So I think bottom line is that we need to continue to assess this case in order to come to a complete and clear answer. It's clearly not as easy as with SCID, and most likely we will not be able to detect the majority of the cases with combined immunodeficiency. Whether we can detect some remains an open question. Now, how do we treat these patients? Well, of course, they are prone to infections, and so you need to intervene by proposing antimicrobial prophylaxis, by diagnosing and treating in an aggressive manner any ongoing infection, very importantly, by avoiding live vaccines of various kinds, and because of the susceptibility to viral infections, in particular to chronic herpes virus infections that these patients have, you need to monitor regularly their level in blood of EBV and CMV, and if you do see a raise in the level of the virus in the blood, you need to treat these viremias promptly. Immunoglobulins can be beneficial. In fact, they are in the majority of the patients with combined immunodeficiencies. But don't be surprised, these patients may also be proposed to be treated with immunosuppressive agents because of their immune dysregulation. Nonetheless, in spite of all of these, this group of disorders still carries a high risk of severe complications, high mortality rate. I mentioned also the malignancies. And so the only definitive treatment that is available for patients with combined immunodeficiencies is, in fact, hematopoietic stem cell transplantation. Now, you heard there are many ways to do transplant. Dr. Buckley showed you very nicely that in babies with SCID, you don't need conditioning. So let me revisit just for a minute how do we do transplant in babies or in children with combined immunodeficiencies. The principle of allogeneic transplantation is that you have a sick infant, the transplantation is mostly done. I mean, the largest experience is done actually in conditions other than immunodeficiency. So let's say you have a child who has a disease that needs to be treated by transplantation, but is not an immunodeficiency. So this patient has a problem, but is otherwise immunocompetent. He's got T cells. He's got stem cells. So what you need to do the transplant is to immunosuppress the patient to prevent actually rejection. You want to eliminate the T cells and the NK cells, and you need to make space in the marrow and kill the stem cells, and you do this by chemotherapy. So by giving this kind of treatments, you actually what you do is to eliminate the malignant cells in case of a leukemia. You destroy the T cells in order to prevent the rejection. And, of course, you destroy also the stem cells by giving the chemotherapy and allowing the engraftment of the donor-derived stem cells. This applies to conditions other than immunodeficiencies. As Dr. Buckley showed you, when you have a SCID baby, you don't have the T cells around. You do have the autologous stem cells. But in this case, there is no need to use the chemotherapy. So there is no need, in fact, to prevent a rejection. There is no need to make space in the marrow. You can simply give the stem cells from the donor, and because of the advantage of the T cells, you will have a very nice T cell engraftment in the absence of any chemotherapy. So no need to use the chemotherapy because there are no malignant cells around that you need to eliminate. And so no chemotherapy is needed for patients with SCID. What about the CID baby? Well, in this case, as I mentioned, T cells are there. They are reduced in number, they are reduced in function, but they are there. And they're potentially capable of mediating graft rejection. So the situation for the patients with combined immunodeficiency is different than in patients with SCID, because unfortunately you do need to prevent rejection, and you do need to use chemotherapy to make some space in the marrow and allow a robust and durable engraftment. How much chemotherapy is needed remains an open question. Depends very much on the type of combined immunodeficiency, on the clinical status of the patient, but the use of chemotherapy and immunosuppression is a major distinction between combined immunodeficiencies and severe combined immunodeficiencies. So how good is the result of transplantation in combined immunodeficiencies? Well, I want to say that unfortunately the data in the literature are very difficult to interpret correctly. The reason being that the definition of combined immunodeficiencies varies very much from study to study. And you really need to look at patients that have a homogeneous definition in order to come up with solid data that you can compare over time to see whether you're doing better or not. This is actually a European study that Dr. Jennery coordinated and is showing the results of transplant in terms of survival in non-SCID conditions. As you know, transplant for SCID now gives excellent survival if you do it early in life, over 90% survival. These are results of survival in a variety of other immunodeficiencies. These in particular are, in that study, called T-cell deficiencies. They're more similar to the combined immunodeficiencies that I've talked about. And obviously, we're not happy with this result. It's only about 60% long-term survival. Perhaps we intervene too late. Perhaps there are already too many complications. We would need better ways to diagnose these patients earlier in life, prevent complications, and provide optimal forms of treatment. So I mentioned these are the caveats in interpreting the results of transplant. The definition of T-cell deficiency is not consistent in different publications, and we would need to look back and analyze homogeneous cohort of patients. There is clearly, and this is a good thing actually, there's a year effect. So transplants that were done after year 2000 seem to do better, but also very importantly, the delayed recognition of these disorders results in worse outcome. And unfortunately, this is a problem with combined immunodeficiencies because many of these patients are only diagnosed later in life when they've already got complications. The type of the combined immunodeficiency, and this is my last slide, also makes a difference. Again, same study, looking at different types of combined immunodeficiency, just to show you how really we're dealing with the different groups of disorder. The patients with PMP deficiency did best in this series. The patients with MHC class II deficiency and Omenn syndrome actually were the ones that did worse in this series. But again, all of this needs to be revisited now. It requires larger series of patients because of the heterogeneity of these conditions. International collaborative studies are needed to address this question. So lots to be done. Very intriguing, puzzling group of disorders. Requires a lot of attention in terms of medical care, a lot of discussion between the physicians and the patients. You need to be patient. This is not an easy group of diagnosis. It requires extensive laboratory testing. Genetics may be the answer for many of these. Thank you.